Last week, when we kicked off this new series, we talked about how sometimes we mistake the identity of Jesus. We portray him to be something else. We think he might be something else. And I ask you all if you have ever been mistaken for somebody. And I was reminded on Monday, I missed an obvious one for me. And, well, let me just put it on the screen. Do we all know who this is? That is Brent Clark. That is correct. Show the rest of the picture in case you don't know. That's Caitlin and her family. And I don't know how I missed this because he is Brent Clark. He also lives in West Des Moines. And evidently his address must be very hard to get because even just this past Thursday in my mailbox is addressed to Caitlin Clark in care of Brent Clark over there on Pleasant Street. Now this one's coming from Mendham, New Jersey, you know. I mean, look at that. Open it. No. Listen. This is not the first time. Maybe it's money. Yeah, I heard that. It took me a second to register that. Don't worry. I mean, this is not the first one. I mean, we've gotten 6 or 10 of these over the last few years, you know, and I'll open it, sign whatever they want, ask Caitlin, and then send it back to them. I'm only kidding. Usually I burn them, but no, just kidding again. I'm very kind. I do write wrong address on it and put it back in my mailbox and let it get sent back to the poor individual that should do a little bit more Google research to discover that Brent Clark, I think, is on 46th Street or South 46th Street or something in West Des Moines. But sorry I missed the low-hanging fruit last week on the other, the imitation Brent Clark that lives in West Des Moines, we'll say. The less famous one. Yeah, the one that hasn't been on ESPN for the last month. But today we're going to continue our series where we're talking about rediscovering Jesus. Who is he? What do we know about him? How do we know more about him? And more importantly, how do we live like him? And today, though, I want to start with this question because I'm really curious your thoughts. When we think about Christians, and the word Christian actually it means little Christ. And so that's what we're supposed to be. But when we think about Christians in our culture today, and let's think about the loudest voices, the ones we see on the news, the ones, you know what I'm talking about? If we were to make a list of the characteristics of these self-professed Christians that we see around us today, what words would we use to describe them? Please be kind. Oh, judgmental. Okay. That one came out quick. What else?
Hypocrite.
Oh, wow.
Misguided.
Self-promoting. And what was this one?
Jingoist.
Say it one more time.
Jingoist.
Christian nationalist. Okay.
Thou shalt not.
Okay, so known more what they're against than what they're for. Anything else come to mind?
MAGA,
okay. What'd you say?
Hateful.
Okay.
Christ is king.
Okay, good. At least we had one positive thing in there. Thank you, Edwin. Isn't it interesting, though, that even as we ask that question, sometimes it's hard to find the positive. It's the voices especially that are the loudest. But if I rephrase that question a little bit, and I were just to say to you, the people in your life that exemplified Jesus to you, I'm assuming we would have a bunch of different words come up, right?
Yes.
We would. In fact, let's just change the question a little bit. If we were to create a list of words that describe Jesus as we find him in the Gospels, what words would we use there?
Loving.
Compassion.
Forgiveness.
What was that?
Yahweh.
Self-sacrificing and
holy.
What was that one? Did I hear another one?
Serving.
God. Out on the margins.
Long-suffering.
Miracle worker. Amen. What'd you say, Harold?
Authoritative.
Yeah. Isn't it interesting how when we put the list of what people may associate with Christian today with actual Jesus, it breaks my heart. Does it yours? That there's such a disconnect between the Jesus we see presented in the Gospels and the Jesus that the voices that say they represent Jesus in our world today. And this isn't a message of judgmentalism. This isn't a message, but what we want to do over the coming weeks is we want to figure out, what is it? Why is it? And more specifically, the Jesus that we just described, how do we, well, what does he look like, and how do we begin to look more like that? This isn't a message or a series on guilt and shame. The message and the goals here is transformation into the image of Christ. And if we have a wrong image, we start looking like the wrong thing. And I think we would all probably agree that that first list that we came up with, outside a few of the positive things we had mentioned at the end, they seem to be misguided. A poor representation of who Jesus is. So we've got a list that we're going to go through over the next several weeks. And so let's just dive into the one today that actually was on our list, something that one of you already said in my notes. I said it was on our list. I hope. Yes, it was. I'm glad. But it was what, as you read about it, it's really one of Jesus's most overwhelming qualities. It's what really defines who him is. And let's see if we can discover it together. I'm just going to read some passages to you and just listen to them and see who is Jesus in these passages. We're going to start at Mark chapter 1, verse 40. It says, "Then a man with leprosy came to him and on his knees begged him, 'If you are willing, you can make me clean.' Moved with compassion, Jesus reached out his hand and touched him. 'I am willing,' he told him, 'be made clean.' Immediately the leprosy left him and he was made clean. Then he sternly warned him and sent him away at once, telling him, 'See that you say nothing to anyone, but go and show yourself to the priest and offer what Moses commanded for your cleansing as a testimony to them.' Yet this man went out and began to proclaim it widely and spread the news, with the result that Jesus could no longer enter a town openly, but he was out in deserted places and they came to him from everywhere." There's one. Let's look at another one. It's in Mark 8. "During those days, another large crowd gathered. Since they had nothing to eat, Jesus called his disciples to him and said, 'I have compassion for these people. They have already been with me 3 days and have nothing to eat. If I send them home hungry, they will collapse on the way because some have come a long distance.'" Picture beginning to form? Let's look at another one. "As Jesus and his disciples were leaving Jericho, a large crowd followed him. 2 blind men were sitting by the roadside. When they heard that Jesus was going by, they shouted, 'Lord, Son of David, have mercy on us.' The crowds rebuked them and told them to be quiet, but they shouted all the louder, 'Lord, Son of David, have mercy on us.' Jesus stopped and called them. 'What do you want me to do for you?' he asked. 'Lord,' they answered, 'we want our sight.' Jesus had compassion on them and touched their eyes. Immediately they received their sight and followed him." That's Matthew 20. What about another one from Matthew chapter 9? "Jesus went through all the towns and villages, teaching in their synagogues, proclaiming the good news of the kingdom and healing every disease and sickness. When he saw the crowd, he had compassion on them because they were harassed and helpless, like sheep without a shepherd." All right, what's the recurring quality we see in all these passages? Compassion. Oh man, you guys are so good. Compassion. It is compassion. And this is just 4 examples of many more that we could have provided. Every healing, every dinner party he attended, the woman at the well, the woman caught in adultery, Zacchaeus, Nicodemus, the Canaanite woman whose daughter was possessed, the centurion soldier whose servant was ill, at the tomb of Lazarus, when engaging with the outcast, when engaging with kids, you name it. Every part of Jesus's ministry oozed with compassion for people. He had a profound sensitivity to anyone who crossed his path. And what's interesting is it wasn't just sensitivity. He didn't just see something and have a good cry about it. He helped them. He was moved with compassion. It was something that motivated him. But when we look at that, when we think about that, I think we need to understand maybe a little differently what compassion is. What is compassion? What is it that we are talking about? Well, I love Greek words sometimes because they're just amazing. And this one's no different because it's splachnizomi. You love that? Splachnizomi or splachnizomai. And if you look in the Greek dictionary, right next to this one is another word that is splanknon. You love that, don't you, splanknon? I love it. But the reason they're next together is because they have the same root and there's some crossing over between what they mean. And so when you have the word compassion and you see splanknon, what does that one mean? Well, that one means the intestines, the entrails, the bowels. Wow, that's fun, isn't it? Wow. What do your bowels have to do with compassion? Years ago, I heard Mark Lowry say a joke. He said, well, it's because when you're with somebody that's really special to you, so you say, hey, you move me, baby. Bowel movement, you get it? Ooh, yeah, exactly. See, what we do with this is in the 21st century, we've shifted it. We no longer speak of our bowels this way. We speak of our heart. We speak of our heart. But for them, in this time frame, it was all about the bowels. It was the place where our most intimate and intense emotions are located. As one commentary described it, they said, anyone who has ever felt the abdominal churning of extreme anxiety or that losing of your stomach feeling on a roller coaster, you kind of understand what we're talking about here. Something that you feel right there. Anybody ever felt that before? Okay, so you're with me. So what Jesus felt when he looked at others, when he looked at their suffering, was nothing less than a gut-twisting emotion. That's what he felt. Scholars point out, though, that this phrase right here is kind of exclusive to describe God and Jesus, that when it says to be moved with compassion, it's about Jesus, it's about the Father, and it reveals the incredible depths of the compassionate response of the divine heart. That's what we're talking about. Henry Nouwen wrote this. He said, when Jesus was moved to compassion, the source of all life trembled. The ground of all love burst open, and the abyss of God's immense, inexhaustible, and unfathomable tenderness revealed itself. Isn't that beautiful? That's what we're talking about here. And let's pause for a moment and ask a fun, uncomfortable question. What moves you like this? Oh, what gets your gut stirring? Oh, and one thing I forgot to mention. It doesn't just have to appear in the positive side. It doesn't have to appear with the unicorns and rainbows. That gut-twisting thing can also appear in the negative, in hate, in apathy, in indifference. And now an even more uncomfortable question is, does that side of it change the answer to the previous question? Is there something that maybe moves you, but moves you and manifests itself more in hatred and anger and devaluing others? Because it's the emotion that comes from the same place. It's just differently expressed. Where Jesus expresses it in a positive way through love and kindness and compassion. The other side is hatred and devaluing other people. That's an uncomfortable question, isn't it? I don't like to ponder those too much. But as much as I would love for us to move on, I wonder if on the list of qualities and characteristics that we made earlier that we said Christians fall into today, where do most of those characteristics fall? They're on the hate side. They're on the negative side. Why are we leaning more there than we are on the positive, on the love and the compassion? And I can hear pushback. I really can. As I'm writing this, I wrote it down. I can hear the pushback. What is the pushback? Well, Brent, Jesus went to the temple and he turned over the tables. You're darn right he did. But can I ask you, where were the tables? They were in the foyer of Ashworth Church. They weren't down the street. They were right here. The tables that he was turning over was with the religious people, the ones who were claiming to represent God, the ones who said, we've got this God stuff figured out. He turned those tables over to say, no, you don't. And just so you're aware, that happened basically twice in his ministry. When compared with the examples of love and compassion and healing, the overwhelming abundance of examples of compassion overwhelm anything else that Jesus did. So then the question is, what are we to do? How are we to live? Let's take a look back at one of these interactions that we read earlier, but we're going to read it from a different gospel, and this one's going to focus in on one of the blind men. It says, they came to Jericho as Jesus and his disciples, together with a large crowd, were leaving the city. A blind man, Bartimaeus, which means son of Timaeus, was sitting by the roadside begging. When he heard that it was Jesus of Nazareth, he began to shout, "Jesus, son of David, have mercy on me." Many rebuked him and told him to be quiet, but he shouted all the more, "Son of David, have mercy on me." Jesus stopped and said, "Call him." So they called to the blind man, "Cheer up, on your feet, he's calling you." Throwing his cloak aside, didn't even have time to get dressed, he jumped up to his feet and came to Jesus. "What do you want me to do for you?" Jesus asked him. The blind man said, "Rabbi, I want to see." "Go," said Jesus, "your faith has healed you." Immediately he received his sight and followed Jesus along the road. What a beautiful picture here. What do you see that Jesus did as he interacted with this man? How did Jesus respond? There's a few things I think that we can take away from what Jesus does, and it's starting with the eyes. Jesus became aware of the need around him. Now, for Jesus, this need might have been a little difficult to ignore. The man was shouting. Everyone else is trying to get this man to shut up and ignore it, but Jesus refuses to be deterred. The man is shouting, and he looks, and he sees, and he says, "Oh, a need." And then Jesus at this moment has a choice, doesn't he? Once he's aware of the need, the choice is then, what am I going to do? Is he going to do like maybe I do sometimes and go, "I don't see anything, I don't hear anything, I'm just going to keep walking"? I mean, and who could have blamed him? Everybody around him's like, "Jesus, don't give that man the time of day. Just keep going. He's not worth your attention." Oh, God, help us if that ever comes across with us, doesn't it? God, help us. But he sees the need, and then he does something interesting. He calls the guy to him. And what we find out is that it's not just being aware of the need, but sometimes we have to have proximity to the need to be able to do anything with it. Jesus calls the man and says, "Come here." And the guy comes near. You know, I love talking with Warren and Char Brady about their hot dog ministry down at Bidwell Riverside. I see Randy and Fran over here. They've helped a few times with it. And, you know, once a month they go to this place that ministers to and reaches out to homeless people and those without resources. There's a food pantry, and they go and they set up their tables and they serve them a hot dog with chili and a bag of chips and water, and usually there's a brownie or a cookie or some kind of dessert. And what I love seeing is watching it, because it's never just, "Here's your hot dog." There's always an interaction. There's always an engagement between Warren and Char and the people. They know their names. They care about them, and these people care about them. That would never happen if Warren and Char just sat here and said, "Hey, can Ashworth send a case of hot dogs down to Bidwell?" It requires proximity to get close to the need. And boy, isn't that a challenge for us today? We don't like messy people. We like things clean and tidy and orderly. And man, when things start to get messy, well, why don't you go see somebody else? And if we ever see an example in Jesus, we see Jesus is always willing to get his hands dirty. Always. What an example for us. Man, the next thing we see, I think we might miss this and we might forget this at times, is what's the next thing is Jesus says, "What do you need? What do you want?" Kind of a dumb question, right? Jesus, why would you ask that question? You clearly see the man's blind. Why would you ask that question? But there's an important principle there. Sometimes we don't need to assume the need. Sometimes we need to ask, "What do you need?" And if we're the one in need, we need to be willing to answer and share the need. Get over yourself. Get over your pride. You have a family. You have people that care. Be willing to share. There's nothing worse, than thinking you are meeting a need and doing something to help somebody that actually ends up hurting them. I mean, I heard stories of when years ago, Haiti, you know, it's a mess right now. It's been a mess for a long time, but they had that massive earthquake where, what, 200,000 people were killed or something like that. And in our good nature wanting to help, the U.S. sent shiploads of rice to that nation. How kind. Except for the fact that it decimated the economy and put all the rice farmers in Haiti out of business. None of them could make any money anymore. If you're interested in that, you should look at a book called When Helping Hurts, because it discusses things like this in great detail. And this can be avoided by actively engaging, by getting close to people in conversation and asking the questions and listening. Listening is critical. And isn't it interesting that Jesus, who clearly could see the man was blind, we've talked about his divinity already. He was God. He already knew what he wanted. But even Jesus took the time to ask the question. Why? Because he knew the people around him weren't God. He knew that we, as we read this story, need to be reminded sometimes. Close your mouth, open your ears, and engage in that way. The last thing, what does Jesus do at the end? He heals the guy. He does something. He responds practically to a situation of human suffering, and he brings healing to this guy. I read this week this quote right here. It says, "Compassion for him goes way beyond fleeting feelings of sympathy and pity. For Jesus, it expresses itself in practical actions aimed at relieving the pain and alienation of those who suffer." That's what Jesus was about. How do I alleviate the pain? Pretty simple, isn't it? See the need, get close to the need, ask and listen to those suffering to make sure you understand the need, and do something. Not necessarily rocket surgery, is it? But still, it's on purpose. How often do we engage in this level of compassion? I was reading a book this week by Trevor Hudson. That's where that last quote came from, all about compassion. And in one of his chapters, he talks about compassion fatigue. And he talked about how in his own life, he got to a place where he'd spend himself so much. And I was going to put a point in here about compassion fatigue, but I thought, I really think we're so far from compassion fatigue that we can talk about that later once we get way closer to it than where we are right now. Maybe. This is what we're talking about. A level of compassion. You guys know I love The Chosen, although I haven't seen the latest season yet. But there's a clip from The Chosen that I really think brings this home. Take a look at this.
Not to spoil this beautiful day or anything, huh? Come on.
It's a leper. Stay back. Cover your mouth. Don't breathe his air.
Don't come any closer.
It's okay, John. It's okay.
Rabbi, Rabbi, Rabbi,
you can't know his disease. You can't.
Please. Please. Please don't turn away from me.
I won't.
Lord, if you are willing, you can make me clean. Only if you want to, I submit to you. My sister, she was a servant at the wedding. She told me what you could do. I know you can heal me if you are willing.
Cleansed.
I knew it. What can I ever do?
No. Do not say anything to anyone.
You don't seek your own honor.
Please just do me this one thing.
But what do I tell people?
Go, show yourself to the priest. Let them inspect you and see that you are cleansed. Make the proper offering in the temple as Moses commanded. And go on your way.
Who has an extra tunic? Just one of you. That's enough. Green is definitely your color. Not too shabby.
We read that earlier, but seeing it brings it to life, doesn't it? If you had to put yourself in that clip, who would you be like? Who would you most emulate in that scene? The disciples who are drawing swords to keep the person in need away? The person screaming, "Get away, Jesus! Don't breathe his air!" Or Jesus? See somebody in need, see somebody crying out for help, and instead of running away or even stating the law to this man about his uncleanness, what does Jesus do? He leans in. He moves toward him. And here's a man who, because of his illness, has been cut off completely from society, cast out from human relationships, cast out from human touch. And don't miss what Jesus did here. You know, with the blind man, we read that Jesus just said, "Be healed." And Jesus could have stayed back with the disciples. He could have stayed a distance away. He could have spoken that word just as he had done multiple times and said, "You are healed." But what did Jesus do here? He walked over to the man and he touched him. Would we have been so willing? I think sometimes that we forget the love and compassion that we've been shown by Jesus. We've been the blind man. We've been the leper. And Jesus, in his incredible compassion, has come to me. He's come to you. And he's put his hands on you. And he says, "I heal you. Your sins are forgiven. You are clean." And when we realize just how much compassion we've been shown, we show that much compassion and more. Unfortunately, though, through time, through hardship, culture wars, political divides, our compassion has become calloused. We become cynical. We become too busy to be interruptible to show compassion. We come to view compassion as optional to the person following Jesus, or we even worse, begin to see compassion as weakness. I think that's what we see today. Compassion is viewed as weakness. If that's the case, then Jesus is the weakest person that ever lived. How's our compassion? Does it match? Is it on the same path of the compassion of Jesus? Are we responsive? Are our hearts tender to and aware of the suffering around us? Or are we indifferent? Are we apathetic? Henry, now and again, he writes this. He says, "Compassion asks us to go where it hurts, to enter the places of pain, to share in brokenness, in fear, in confusion, in anguish. Compassion challenges us to cry out with those in misery, to mourn with those who are lonely, to weep with those who are in tears. Compassion requires us to be weak with the weak, vulnerable with the vulnerable, and powerless with the powerless. It means full immersion in the condition of being human. That's what we're talking about. And as much as I would love to look at you today and say, but don't worry, if you're not a super Christian, this doesn't apply to you. This is a separate set. This is a separate thing for those that really follow Jesus. This is like step one. I mean, this is like basic, foundational, following Jesus 101. Because it describes the essence of those who are truly following Jesus. Those who are sitting at his feet, listening, learning, following him. Those who would call themselves apprentices of Jesus. Author and pastor Trevor Hudson, in the book I was talking about earlier, wrote this. He said, compassion lies at the heart of the authentic Christ follower. Any spiritual experience, whether it be one of solitude and silence, prayer and fasting, or worship and celebration, that does not result in a deeper concern for our suffering neighbor can hardly be called Christian. The critical test for our relationship with the Holy One always involves the quality of our love for those around us. Well, I feel very convicted now. Why is this so important? Because of what Jesus said in Matthew 25. He's telling a parable to the disciples, and he says, you know, there's sheep and there's goats, and I'm going to be one on the left and one on the right. And he says, and with the sheep, I'm going to look at them and I'm going to say, hey, I was hungry and you fed me, and I was thirsty and you gave me something to drink. I was naked and you clothed me. You took care of me, Jesus said. And they'll look at me and they'll say, well, when did we do that? And what's Jesus say? He said, when you have done it for the least of these, you have done it unto me. The compassion we show others is like showing compassion to Jesus. It is equivocal to that. It's the same. The antithesis of that is also true when Jesus says, I was hungry and you gave me nothing to eat. I was thirsty and you gave me nothing to drink. And they said, when did we do that? And what did Jesus say? When you didn't do it to the rest, you didn't do it for me. How do we grow in compassion? It's not by willpower. It's not by you going out and telling yourself every day, I will be more compassionate. You know how we grow in compassion? Sitting at the feet of Jesus, experiencing his compassion over and over. And then we become more compassionate. If we fill our lives with the crap that's on social media and the hate that's on network news or 24 news hour channels, what do you think you're going to spew? Hate, worry, fear, anxiety. But if we sit and we pause at the feet of the Savior, at the feet of the master of compassion, you can't help but become more compassionate. And if you need help, just get you a pocket gospel. And I heard Pope Francis say this, and I thought, wow, this is amazing. He said, just carry it with you all the time. Because the only way you become like that person is to know more about them. And if you're at a restaurant and you're waiting on food, read the gospel. If you're getting your tires fixed and you know having time to wait, get the gospel. Just any spare time you have, read more about Jesus. Willpower will never get you there, but sitting and surrendering at the feet of Jesus will, allowing the Spirit of God to form within us the heart of Christ. Proximity to Jesus and to Jesus' people will help us deepen our love for him, which will in turn deepen our love for others. Yes. And just to close, we just had the Lord's Supper. And as I was studying this week, I read something by N.T. Wright. And he talks about compassion. He says, we cannot worship the suffering God today and ignore him tomorrow. We cannot eat and drink the body and blood of the passionate and compassionate God today and then refuse to live passionately and compassionately tomorrow. If we say or sing as we often do, glory be to the Father and to the Son and to the Spirit, we thereby commit ourselves in love to the work of making His love known to the world that still stands so sorely in need of it. This is not the God the world wants. This is the God the world needs. Let's pray. God, even now as we pause to pray, not in a guilt and shame building way, but God, just in a way, let us do a little heart check and see, how do we compare when it comes to Jesus? What do we look like when it comes to compassion? Are we good at ignoring, or are we good at leaning in? God, this is a high standard that I think for most of my walk with Jesus, I've tried to ignore. But if I want to be a little Jesus, if I want to be a little Christ in this world, what it's going to require is for me to have the compassion of Christ, to lean into the suffering around us that we see, not get sucked up in what the world may currently think of Jesus or what a Christian is, but redefining it, God, to being the ones that may not be the loudest, but are the ones that are working the hardest to alleviate the suffering of the people around us. So God, help us take our hearts of stone and give us hearts of flesh. Remove our cynicism, remove our indifference, remove our apathy, and let us love as Jesus loves.